This is Locked On Nets. I am your host, Josh Bass, and on today's episode, we will discuss the Nets' third straight epic win in a row, D'Angelo Russell's All-Star chances, and his huge 40-point performance against the Orlando Magic. All that and more on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is Locked On Nets. I am Josh Bass, joined by Marcus Barahal, and our mission is to get you in-depth Brooklyn Nets analysis as quickly as possible in the form of bite-sized morsels of fresh content that we call podcast episodes here at Locked On Nets. And the team we're discussing, the Brooklyn Nets, has been surging recently. The Nets win their third straight game in a row with another epic comeback over the Orlando Magic. Doesn't have the same cachet as the Houston Rockets, but Marcus, a great win's a great win nonetheless. Am I right?
You're right, Josh. Three straight wins and games coming up against the Kings, the Knicks, the Magic again. Kings have played better this year than they have, but still three very winnable games coming up. This win streak could continue for a little while.
Yeah, let's keep the good mojo going. Spencer Dinwiddie was the main hero in the Houston game. He played well last night as well, but this time it was D'Angelo Russell, his show. He scored 40 points on 16 of 25 from the field, 8 of 12 from 3, 7 assists versus 1 turnover. He was really the only Net doing anything in the first half, 24 points, and then had a really good second half as well, and obviously hit the go-ahead 3 on a step back to give that Nets a 3-point lead, which with about 20 seconds left, I believe, and they did not relinquish that the rest of the game. So D'Lo was kind of the star of last night.
Yeah, he was incredible. I mean, 40 points without getting to the line once is really hard to do. 8 of 12 threes is absurd. I think he had 5 or 6 of those in the first half, like you said, and he was really the whole offense early on. At the end of the second quarter, I think he scored the last 19 Nets points to keep them in it going into halftime. There was like a tipping point at one point where the Nets were getting close to cutting it to 10. Then the Magic kind of pushed it up to like 18 or so. But then Russell kind of single-handedly brought them back within like 11. Then the Magic got a basket at the end of the half to make it 13. But still, the only reason they were in this game at all, at least in the first half, was because of D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, they were down by 13 at the half, and that was about a 21-point deficit for parts. But yeah, I mean, he was just unstoppable. I don't think the Magic were necessarily doing a bad job on him because they put Fournier on him as the primary matchup, and Fournier is a guy with a lot of size. And then when he was getting switched off D'Angelo Russell, D'Lo was getting guarded by guys like Isaac and Aaron Gordon, but he just had it going. You know, he was taking these high-arching, lofty three-pointers that were just splashing through the net. I mean, it wasn't like he was getting a ton of open looks because he was the one creating his own offense. But again, we've seen time and time again, he doesn't need a ton of separation to get hot. And these games don't happen often. I mean, don't happen all the time. I mean, he's been playing really well lately. And he's still a bit inconsistent, and kind of the lack of free throws. When he's cold, he's very cold. And when he's hot, he's very hot. But games like this are just a joy to watch.
Yeah, and he seemed much more confident driving to the basket than I've seen recently. Like, he was doing a lot of, like, head fakes, and he did, like, the Rondo fake behind the back pass once or twice. Mm-hmm. I felt like he really just maybe was very confident and knew what he could do. He's been playing really well, so that probably adds to it. And it was good in this game, especially late, to see him and Dinwiddie both playing well in the same game. I feel like it's usually one or the other, but they kind of both turned it on in the second half.
Yeah, no, they played well. Dinwiddie finished with 18 points in the second half. He didn't do much in the first half, but, I mean, he was getting it going with his three-point shot, got to the basket, and had 7 free throws. So he played really well in the second half, just to compliment D'Angelo Russell. And we'll talk a bit more about those guys later and kind of the all-star cases for both of them. But, Marcus, it was so frustrating to watch the first half because I felt like it was a combination of bad defense from the Nets, and Orlando was also hitting everything. Orlando finished 50% from the field, and they were at 58% for most of the game. And this is not like a high-powered offensive team. I don't know what was happening. Like, why were the Nets down by so much to a team on paper, especially with the way the Nets have been playing, that they should handle pretty easily?
Yeah, it was confusing early because I felt like the Nets, I didn't think their defense was that bad. There were a lot of times where the Nets kind of switched to zone in a possession, and they kind of confuse the Magic for a little bit, and then the shot clock would get down to like 6-5 seconds, and it would just end up being like Terrence Ross or someone hitting like a kind of contested three over the defender's outstretched hand. It felt like the Magic just got shots to fall, as simple as it is. DJ Augustine had some nice plays. He had a hook shot at one point, I think, in the second quarter. It didn't really make any sense, but it went in. Vucevic didn't shoot the ball well, but he was super active rebounding-wise, which we've talked about the Nets kind of struggle against that type of player, at least on the boards. So the Magic just kind of got a lot of chances, and they made the most of those in the first half, at least.
Yeah, I don't know. The Orlando's kind of an interesting team, especially last night, because they weren't. It's not like they were playing amazingly as a team, but it would be like one guy would get hot. Like Fournier would have a couple baskets in a row, then he would cool down, and then it's like he would tag out and like, okay, Vucevic, now you score like 7 in a row. Terrence Ross, you're in. And yeah, they were hitting a lot of tough shots. I mean, Terrence Ross hit a ridiculous step back. And also Terrence Ross is someone that should probably be on a contender. He's a really good three-point shooter. He can get hot in a microwave. He's kind of like a cheaper, more consistent Allen Crabbe almost. But I don't know. I feel like Napier's defense wasn't good. D'Angelo Russell, I thought, had some good defensive moments, kind of defending off ball and denying. But I thought his on-ball defense was really bad. I mean, Augustine had two plays in particular that I can remember where he didn't even have a pick set for him. He just kind of drove right by D'Lo, and there was no help at the rim, just because I think Jared Allen got a bit conflicted over whether he should step back and help, or which would mean leaving Vucevic wide open, and Vucevic is a deadly outside shooter. So it's still a learning moment for Jared Allen, but I thought, I don't know, the perimeter defense just wasn't as good as it should have been.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think the point you made about Allen is really an interesting point and a good one. I think that with a guy like Vucevic, you do have to respect that outside shot. And Allen did a good job of that because Vucevic only attempted 3 threes. But at the same time, that did open things up because the Nets didn't really have anyone else inside who could protect the rim. And so guys like Augustine and Fournier could kind of finish inside and get to the line.
Yeah, that's the one time where you kind of want... I mean, the Nets are going right now with Travion Graham playing the four. He played 29 minutes last night, and all those minutes were basically exclusively at the four, but they don't have any sort of weak side shot blocking from the four position. So if Jared Allen's standing out there, there's really no one that's going to come and help. And it resulted in a lot of easy layups for guys like DJ Augustine, the immortal Wesley Iwundu. So I don't know. It's frustrating to watch. I think that's one weakness of this Nets team that I think the one thing they need is like a stretch four who can also defend the rim and switch out on the perimeter. And I think the Hall of Fame version of that is Kevin Durant. So KD, please consider Brooklyn this offseason. We would love to have you, and would be a great fit. And Marcus, I kind of want to just reflect on this game quickly because the Nets were so bad earlier in the season, blowing games late. Obviously, the New Orleans game they blew, the Memphis game they blew, Philly, so many time and time again. They just had a huge lead and kind of wilted under the pressure down the stretch. But and I know Orlando's not a great team, but you're still on the road against a team that has a couple decent players and plays hard, and they were able to come back from a huge deficit, chip away. They were down by 4-6 for most of the fourth quarter, didn't let that lead, that deficit balloon at all, and they were able to make a couple key plays late down the stretch. I mean, Spencer Dinwiddie's four-point play, that can't be forgotten about. That was probably the turning point in the game where it gave the Nets the edge.
Yeah, that was a great play out of the timeout. But also just going back to the clutch record thing, there was an article that I read this morning by our good friend Jared Yaya Dubin, I think it was on Fansided, where he was talking about the Nets' record in clutch games and how early on in the season, I think they were like 2-10 in games that were within 5 points in the last 5 minutes. And they've kind of turned a corner in that respect where that thing kind of tends to even out over the course of the season. And so now they're playing probably over their heads a little bit, but given where they were earlier in the season, it evens out. And I think this is about where this team is. They're probably not going to be a 16-5 team over every 21 game stretch like they are right now, because that's like a 62 win pace. But when you consider the losing streak they went on, they weren't that bad. They probably aren't this good. They're somewhere in the middle. And I think that going forward, I'd expect them to be like a low 40s win team.
Yeah, and it's fair because when you look at the system they play, a lot of ball movement just to compensate for guys that they don't have a ton of really good ISO scores. They don't have, I mean, D'Angelo Russell or Spencer Dinwiddie, a case could be made that they can make the All-Star team, but they don't have any traditional lock-it-in All-Star guys. So you'd think they'd struggle down the stretch, but it just seems they're getting it done somehow. I mean, guys like Damari Carroll were making huge plays last night. Jarrett Allen didn't have the best game on offense. I thought he really struggled, but and defensively he wasn't amazing. But down the stretch, he had some huge blocks, cleaning the defensive glass, and really gave the Nets guards like D'Angelo Russell and Spencer Dinwiddie the chance for them to win that game.
Yeah, Allen I thought was huge in the fourth quarter and down the stretch. He had a couple nice blocks, I think, on Vucevic where he just kind of pinned it against the glass, and then that started a fast break the other way. And for the Nets, if they can like get things moving like that, they're a really good passing team, and they can swing the ball around and get open looks. And I think that the defense kind of triggered the offense, at least late in the game.
Yes, absolutely agree with pretty much everything you said, Marcus. We're on the same page as co-hosts. We will take a quick break here on Locked On Nets, and coming up, we'll have some final thoughts on this game and also discuss a roster move with Kenneth Faried being released so he can head to the Houston Rockets and what Sean Marks may have up his sleeve to replace him. Segment two here on Locked On Nets. We might put up a Twitter poll on the Locked On Nets account. Again, follow us on that account saying which is your favorite segment, one, two, or three, and maybe play a PG version of this game. I guess we'll call it Have Relations With, Marry, or Exile from between segment one, two, and three on what people's favorite is.
That was a great job of self-censoring, Josh. That was really good.
Yeah, listen, we try to keep it PG here on Locked On Nets, you know?
Paul George.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many little Nets fans that are listening to us. These 7 and 8 year olds, they're just taken by what the Nets are doing, and those would be
young minds.
Yeah, those would be Knicks fans listening to Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw. Now they're coming over here, and if they're listening with their parents, I don't want their parents to be saying, "Hey, what is this Locked On Nets?"
We got to kind of slip it in like SpongeBob or like the Lego movie, just like so the parents get it, but the kids are like, I don't know what's going
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. Yes. We appeal to all audiences here on Locked On Nets. Marcus, let's talk quickly about a couple other players that I thought were interesting this game. Two of them being Shabazz Napier and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. You know, Napier finished the game with 12 points, not efficient from the field, 4 of 13, but I thought his 4 3-pointers all kind of came at pretty good times when the Nets were struggling a bit and Orlando could have really put the game out of reach, and Napier did a nice job of kind of getting them back into it, always making those big shots, even though it wasn't the most efficient night for him.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. He kind of was part of that little run in the third quarter with Carroll and Dinwiddie a little bit, but it was a little bit too much shooting for me. I think the minutes he's been playing the last couple of games, it might just be related to the injury, but I think that this like slight downtick in minutes is probably a good thing. I think like in the 15 to 20 minute range is where he should be. Whereas like a couple of games ago, I remember he like led the team in minutes for one game, which I thought was too much. Yeah, I think he's definitely a rotation player, but I think his role could be reduced even a little bit more.
Yeah, he's frustrating to watch at times when he's not going well, and he's just not a good defender, and his ball handling and passing needs some work, but he can get hot. So it's nice to have him on the roster. He took 13 shots in 18 minutes last night, which is, it's definitely a lot. But I think if Caris LeVert can come back, and hopefully that would be within the next month or so, he started to do some light shooting. So I don't want to get my hopes up because the Nets are very conservative with injuries. But if LeVert were to come back and give the Nets that extra ball handler and creator, I don't think Napier is going to be playing much on this team. But let's also talk about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Rondae left the game. It looked like he banged knees with Spencer Dinwiddie. No injury update. It looks like the Nets didn't report anything. I think he might be good to go for the game against Sacramento on Martin Luther King Day. But he struggled again, 1 of 7 from the field, 14 minutes. I just don't know if he has a place on this team long term.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I'm still willing to give him a little bit more time just coming back from the injury. He only played 14 minutes, like you said. Yeah, offensively, he definitely hasn't looked right, though, in this game or in the Houston game, even though it's been a small sample. But I thought that his mobility looked okay on defense. Obviously, he left with the banged knee, like you said, so I'm not sure if he'll be able to like get back to where he was defensively anytime soon. But I think there's still a role for him. I think that neither of us thinks he's going to like learn to shoot all of a sudden, but if he can even become like passable, I think he could be that guy that you talked about earlier, that four who could kind of provide some slight rim protection and maybe space the floor a little bit if he can ever get to that. But again, I might just be a little too optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, he's shooting under 40% from the field for the whole season, and his three-point shot, it's his fourth season in the league, and he still has shown like absolutely no progress. And I think in terms of he could be kind of that weak side shot blocking guy and that's what he was billed as coming out of school. But I just think his athleticism has deteriorated so much, really starting with his big ankle injury his rookie season, because I thought he was like top 1%, top 2% of NBA athletes, and now he's just kind of another guy out there. He's lost a lot of his explosiveness, so I don't think the Nets are going to be re-signing him as a restricted free agent this year, and I think he could have an opportunity to play elsewhere and maybe be the starting four on a team that has some shooting at the five, but I just don't think there's a fit there with the Nets.
Yeah, it's kind of tough because you kind of almost have to like build your team around mm-hmm. him based on his limited skill set, but he's like not the he's not really talented enough to warrant that a lot of times.
Yeah, so. He's a fun guy to have on the roster, though, and he's a good personality. Marcus, let's talk a couple. I want to talk about the Orlando young players. I thought Mohamed Bamba looked really good. His shot was pretty good from mid-range. He finished with 9 points, 4 of 6 from the field, hit a three. And what do you make of these guys like a Bamba, a Jonathan Isaac, and Aaron Gordon, who is kind of just trapped in wasteland in Orlando, but is still has developed into a really good player? They're an interesting team for me. They kind of just need a good guard.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, DJ Augustine played well in this game, but I agree. They need a little bit more talent there. I was a big Bamba fan pre-draft, and same with Isaac. I really liked both of those guys. Bamba's from my neighborhood. Big shouts to him. Great song mm-hmm. that he inspired also.
Marcus actually goes by Sheck yeah. West, in case people didn't know.
Oh, yeah. We should have probably mentioned that. That's fine. I'll talk about another pod. But with Aaron Gordon, his development as a shooter has been really impressive to me, because obviously like he was always a great athlete and he's still a really good athlete, but the outside shot is really, like we were just talking about with Rondé, where he's been in the league 4 years and he hasn't really improved at all in that area, but it feels like Gordon, who used to, I don't even think he really took them early mm-hmm. on in his career, and now he made 3 threes in this game. He just seems like he's constantly improving, and that's really good to see from a young player, but I agree, they need someone to get him the ball. You can't have DJ Augustine and Shelvin Mack leading your team in assists every year, as nice of a Twitter graphic as that may be.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think it's interesting. And also, Gordon, it's not just that he's a standstill three-point shooter. His jumper, he's developed a bit more versatility. He can hit it off the catch. He can, if he's running screen and roll, he can step into a three off the dribble. So he's really improved his skill a lot. I saw a trade float around on the Ringer, which would be Aaron Gordon for CJ McCollum, and I actually like that a lot for both teams. But yeah, Orlando. Yeah,
The Magic are like a really weird, unique team where I feel like most teams have a ton of guards. Like the Nets have a guy like Napier who's like their third guard, but he would probably be the best guard. Or, I mean, I guess Fournier is good, but he'd be up there on the Orlando team who has like a lot of big guys. It's really, you don't really see it anymore.
Yeah, I feel like it's the type of thing where they were banking like 2017 draft. They were banking their hopes on getting Fultz. They don't, and then they have to take Jonathan Isaac. 2018, they're like, okay, we'll get Trae Young. No, it's Bamba instead. So it seems like they keep missing out, and the picks they're making aren't bad in a vacuum, but then you look up and they've taken 4 front court players over the last few years, and it's like, okay, we need at some point someone to get them the ball. It seems like a college team almost that has a really good recruiting class, but it happens to be all big men, like a Kentucky team every couple of years, and then it's like they're playing a 6'9 guy at shooting guard just like because they want talented players, even though they have no one that can spread the floor. But enough Magic talk. Marcus, the Kenneth Faried era is over in Brooklyn. Both Shams and Woj reported that he will be released and he'll be signing with the Houston Rockets. I think Faried, I tweeted this on the Locked On Nets account, but you know, he just wasn't the most natural fit in Brooklyn because he doesn't have the size to play the five at all, and he can't shoot the three, so he's not a four. But he had a couple spurts here and there. Ian Eagle reported on the Steve Lichtenstein podcast that Farid's really the only guy that hasn't bought into the Nets culture, and then he was released a couple days later. Any parting thoughts on the Kenneth Faried era?
Yeah, I mean, that Ian Eagle quote, I was going to bring up the same thing, and you could kind of tell a little bit just because it seemed like everyone else would be like the first ones off the bench, and then he'd kind of drift behind a little bit, have his hood on. he's fine. I thought that we talked about it where it looked like he was almost stat padding, auditioning for
almost.
Other teams. Yeah, he was completely stat padding. Maybe the Rockets saw something on the bench on Wednesday where they were like, we got to get this guy. I think he's an interesting fit there just because they're missing Capella and they kind of need just someone to roll to the rim and throw down dunks, which he can do. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see. Him and Nene have a some great hair between the two of them.
Yeah, no, was he on Denver at the same time Nene was? So it's kind of a reunion there.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I didn't even think about
that. Yeah, Nene will take him under his wing again. Yeah, no, it sucks for Fareed because he was a Newark, New Jersey guy. I was happy to get him, local guy, but it just didn't work out here. And I think he is a better fit on Houston, as you mentioned, because without Capella, they're missing that rim roller, and they're not playing any defense anyway because Gary Clark was their starting center against the Nets. So, you know, might as well throw him out there and see if it can juice up the offense a little bit. And I don't know if they're going to throw him into a 30-minute-per-game role, but he's a nice option to have along with Nene. Marcus, kind of looking at this open roster spot, I think Sean Marks has a bit of room to play with. He can keep it open until the NBA trade deadline, which is on February 7th, use it as leverage to potentially take on a two-for-one deal. Or he can give a guy like Alan Williams or Theo Pinson, the Nets' two-way contracts, a full-time deal and then look to add another two-way guy. What do you think the direction that Sean Marks will go will be with this open roster spot?
I think he's going to probably wait it out and just see what happens and what develops on the trade market. I think we'll talk about it a little later, but the Nets have a lot of guys who they could send one off or send two off and try to get other people back to fill other holes. But I think just maintaining flexibility as long as you can is probably the right move.
Yeah, I was looking at the Twitter account Ridiculous Upside today, which fills the which talks a lot about the G League prospects and seeing which non-two-way guys are doing well. And there's a couple names there. No one that's really sticking out to me, but maybe a guy like, can I interest you in Darius Johnson Odom, former Marquette product? And who else was I seeing? Yeah.
Great name on Darius Johnson Odom.
Travis Trice, or he might be a two-way guy. Vander Blue. There's a couple guys. But yeah, I'll like to see what Sean Marks does, and I think the Nets will be a team to watch at the trade deadline. So it's good for him to have that flexibility. But live long and prosper, Kenneth Fareed in Houston. On segment three, we'll discuss a little bit more about the potential moves the Nets can make at the trade deadline and who deserves the All-Star game more, Spencer Dinwiddie or D'Angelo Russell, coming up. Segment three. A surprise for you guys, the return of Quick 2. And we'll try to make this quick, but it never really is, so we'll see. First Quick 2, are the Nets better off keeping Run DMC, a.k.a. Damari Carroll, for a potential playoff run, or given his really good play recently, trading him for some future assets? Marcus, Quick 2, go.
I think they should keep him. I think that with the way, like we talked about earlier, that Rondé hasn't really hit his stride or anything yet, and Jared Dudley, not sure what the update on him is, but he's still out. So I think they need the contributions at the four, and Carroll's playing really well. I think that there's reason to believe that the reason he struggled earlier in the season was just because of injury, and I think now that he's fully healthy, not that that's a guarantee that he'll stay healthy, but I think he's played well enough where he should be in the rotation, and I think that he could really help the Nets.
Yeah, no, he's definitely been helping the Nets. You know, I think that what I would probably want to do with Damari Carroll is at least take some feelers on what could be out there for him. And he's been playing really well lately, and there are some desperate teams, especially in the West Coast. So if there's no trade made, then it's still a win because Damari Carroll's been playing well, and he's going to help the Nets. But I think it makes sense for Sean Marks to explore what's out there. Marcus, could I interest you in Damari Carroll for Solomon Hill and Pelicans first-round pick? So the Pelicans get off some bad money. The Nets take that in, but they also get a first-round pick for this year. Who knows if the Pelicans are going to make the playoffs, and now it gives the Nets a third first-round pick and some additional ammo if they want to package that for a very good player that can help them more than Damari Carroll would, or trade that pick come draft time for future assets when there's a more deeper draft if a team is interested. Let's say they fall in love with the player and they want either the Pelicans or Denver's first-round pick just to make that selection in the 2019 draft.
Would that pick be protected, hypothetically? Like Leonard protected? Or
Top seven protected, maybe?
Okay, I might do that, honestly. I mean, I'm not the biggest Solomon Hill fan, but I think that
he's
the Pelicans...
He's salary Thor, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really think that they'll... If they make the playoffs, it'll be as like a 7 or 8 seed. So that pick will probably be in like the mid to maybe late teens. And that's a pretty good asset for Carroll. I mean, I don't know. Do you think he'd even get that much? I guess for me, I was thinking, like, don't force a trade where you're not getting good return back. But if you can get something like that, I think it might be worth it.
Yeah, I think that's – I was listening to one of the Ringer podcasts, and they brought on a Pelicans beat writer who was saying they're definitely going to trade their first-round pick for the current year help. And also for the Pelicans, it's attractive because Damari Carroll's a much better player than Solomon Hill, and they're also getting off Solomon Hill's contract for next year, which is about $13 million. And it does eat into the Nets' cap flexibility. But with those first-round picks, they can make an attractive offer for a really good star-level player almost if they wanted to trade a guy like D'Angelo Russell or even Caris LeVert, just kind of condensing assets and going for someone that can raise the ceiling a bit.
Yeah, I think the condensing assets is a really big point because a lot of times teams wait on the right deal and then they wait too long and guys age or the deal goes away, or there's a lot of reasons where you should kind of act when you have the momentum.
Yep, agreed. Second part of Quick 2, who deserves the All-Star game more, Marcus? D'Angelo Russell or Spencer Dinwiddie, or maybe neither of them in your opinion?
I think it's really tough. I think that those guys have been, like, neither of them has been super consistent, but their averages, I mean, Russell's at 19 points and about 6.5 assists, and Dinwiddie's at 17 and 5. But Russell's obviously been starting, whereas Dinwiddie comes off the bench. But then again, their minutes played are pretty similar. Russell plays about 1 minute more per game. Their efficiency's pretty similar. Dinwiddie's maybe slightly more efficient. They're pretty even players, honestly. I think that Dinwiddie got a lot of buzz during the Nets' winning streak and kind of like late December when they were turning the corner. And then now that they've maintained, it's been more Russell. So I think recency bias would probably lead me to say Russell. He has the higher pedigree also. So I'm going to say Russell.
Yeah, I feel like it's so close because, as you mentioned, there's pros and cons to both of them. I think one of them definitely deserves to get in. The Nets should be rewarded. And quietly, D'Angelo Russell's up to over 37% on 7 threes a game. I mean, still efficiency. Dinwiddie blows him out of the water because he's getting a lot more layups at the rim, and his free throw percentage, or he's getting to the line a lot more, and he has a 60% true shooting, which is really amazing for a guard. But I think D'Angelo Russell's had, they both had a ton of star moments recently. I mean, Dinwiddie, obviously, the game against Houston, Russell, the game against the Lakers, and against the Magic recently. So, you know, it's a toss-up. I think that the, just because Dinwiddie, again, he was the second round pick, cut from a couple teams, even though he's come such a long way, it's still not at the All-Star level, while D'Angelo Russell, the floor that he's had to rebound from, it's still a former number two overall pick. So I think that the players and the coaches will lean towards him a bit more than Spencer Dinwiddie, who is still a rock star in his own right.
Yeah, I think that they're both equally deserving. I just think that D'Lo is probably still the bigger name, and I think that, like, casual NBA fans, when they think of the Nets, they probably see the roster and they say, oh, D'Angelo Russell, he's their best player. I think that's still the case, even though Dinwiddie is probably just as good.
Yeah, we're still educating people on how good Spencer Dinwiddie is, but
they got to learn.
Listen, I'd love to see one of them in the All-Star game. I think they're going to be fighting for that last spot with guys like Nikola Vucevic of Orlando, whose case might have fallen off a bit with Orlando's poor play recently. Kyle Lowry, Chris Middleton, Pascal Siakam. But I don't know.
Your guy.
The Nets are over 500. They're the sixth seed. Give them one All-Star, please. It would make me very happy. Marcus, what else do we got?
I think that's about it. This is completely unrelated to anything, but I really liked Rondé's shoes in this game. They looked like bowling shoes. They were like half red, half black.
Oh, interesting. I'll look it up. I didn't notice it. Have you seen this kid Coby White on North Carolina?
I'm watching the game right now.
He's pretty good.
I was going to say, you kept looking to the side. I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, Coby White. Coby White's what's going on.
The White Mamba.
And Miami has a 5'7 point guard also. That's really good. Yeah, he's like a new Earl Boykins.
We needed another. It's been too long.
Yeah, we did.
Tyler Ulis tried, but you know.
Tyler Ulis cannot live up to that. Nate Robinson held the torch for a little bit. Yeah. But I'm telling you, this guy, Chris Likes on Miami, is going to be the new Earl Boykins. He's only a sophomore, but give it a couple years, and he's probably going to be a four-year player. But when he comes into the league, Earl Boykins, pass that torch.
Pee that tea, Earl.
Yeah, posting and toasting. No, not that website. Nets Daily, I'm kidding. So that's going to do it. We're going off the rails here on Locked On Nets. Another great win. The Nets are firmly in the sixth seed now with that Miami loss. Please follow us on Twitter. I know I've been plugging it throughout the podcast, but it is Locked On Nets. My personal handle is at JMBass_. Marcus's is at Marcus Barahal. Subscribe to the podcast and all of the other Locked On podcasts, basketball, baseball, football, college, anything that you want, we probably have, or just tell David Locke to get it up and running, because that guy's taking over the world right now. He's taking over the podcast world. Rate us, review us. Marcus, until next time, I will speak to you soon.
Bye.